Members will call the meeting to order. Purdue Telecom Reg and Infrastructure Division. I guess we do have a quorum, I've been advised. So, reviewing the minutes here, Representative Hoppe, would you be willing to...
I would like to move the minutes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hoppe moves the minutes. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails, the minutes are approved. Members, before we get on to today's main part of the agenda, just kind of an overview of what's going to be occurring. We're going to be looking at two bills today. The first one, Representative Mason's bill, 2107, and she has a couple testifiers that are going to be coming a little bit later, so hopefully we might have to take a couple-minute recess while we wait for them. And then we're going to take a look at the statewide cable franchising bill, which has just been jacketed, and we're making some copies of that now that will be available for folks shortly, and then we'll be taking testimony on that as well. Now, with respect to the statewide cable franchising matter, we'll be meeting again to look at some of those issues, so if we didn't get to everybody today, or if some others want to put in their 2 cents worth on this matter, we'll have the opportunity to do so on Friday, April 13th. So that is the plan, when we'll meet again, not the next Friday or the Friday after, but Friday, April 13th, we're going to meet again to review this. So, with no further ado, Representative Mason, would you like to move your bill?
I would definitely like to move House File 2107.
And very good. Would you like to proceed with what your bill is about and introduce your testifier?
Okay, Mr. Chair, members. Just to give you a little background, I do represent Eagan, which is the eighth largest city in the state. And it's also home to Minnesota's largest software developer. And for the fifth year in a row now, it's the number one job creator in the metro area, and that has, according to the latest state statistics, experienced a 15% growth in scientific and technical jobs, while the Twin Cities as a whole has suffered a 6% decline. My constituents know a thing or two about technology, and that's why I'm here. We're here out of concern for the state of the broadband technology in all of Minnesota, not just Dakota County. The representatives that I have here are part of a task force that has been meeting in Eagan for the last year or so, and they'll identify themselves as they testify. Now, one of Minnesota's favorite sons, columnist Thomas Friedman, author of the best-selling The World is Flat, has written, and I quote, "Bandwidth is important for commerce the same way railroads were important in the 1890s and seaports were important in the 1790s. In a wired world without walls, the future belongs to the shapers and adapters who get the broadband they need to deliver the services of tomorrow." Members, you'll hear testimony today that the U.S. is falling significantly behind in this race to deliver high-speed internet speeds. And you'll hear also that Minnesota currently has no comprehensive plan to catch up with states like California or countries like Singapore. That's why before you right now you have a bill that's really ambitious to get 1 gigabit access throughout Minnesota by the year 2015. It's a policy goal California and Singapore have already adopted. It's a speed 1,000 times faster than wireless, more than 330 times faster than the available DSL speeds in Minnesota, 125 times faster than cable modem service. And with that, I'd like to have our first testifier, Ruthie Batulis, and I'll have her identify herself.
And if you would just identify yourself for the record, who you represent, and Go ahead with your testimony, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ruthie Batulis. I'm president of Northern Dakota County Chambers of Commerce. We're located in Eagan. We serve 9 cities and 2 townships in Dakota County. We are home to such companies as Thompson West, Lockheed Martin, Northwest Airlines, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Ecolab, R&D. We're also the site of the proposed Umore Park in Rosemount and the proposed regional distribution center, and we also serve the green fields of Farmington and the townships beyond. So when you say the future, I say technology. On Tuesday, February 20th, our board of directors at NDC Chambers unanimously approved the high-speed Minnesota broadband policy. In partnership with our largest employers, and by the way, we serve about 40,000 private sector employees in our chamber footprint. Our largest employers in Dakota County, such as Thompson West, Blue Cross Blue Shield, and Northwest Airlines, as well as our smaller and home-based businesses, we feel that our visionary policy on broadband is important to start the conversation for the future deployment of broadband in Minnesota. The rationale for the approval of our policy is expanding new markets for business, enhancing educational access, strengthening telemedicine initiatives, increasing the potential to attract and retain jobs in Minnesota, and providing business with the capabilities necessary to compete in today's global marketplace. We have been meeting in Eagan for about 3 years, and our largest employers say that they have the bandwidth and speeds that they need today for their business, and that they are able to afford the cost of such service. We also know that our smaller businesses can get bandwidth and speeds that they need today, but the cost may be prohibitive for them. But we do see an increasing need for increased bandwidth and speed, and it's developing at an ever-increasing rate, especially with businesses that are home-based or employees that are working from home. We are aware of home-based businesses that do global business testing scanning 24/7 out of their homes. We also know of engineers working from home that cannot get the bandwidth and speed to download their CAD drawings. We know of auto mechanics that can't access the repair schematics necessary to do their business. It's time now to prepare for the future, a future that embraces the 1 gig world standard. We believe that through collaboration, cooperation, and communication that we can achieve the goals of the high-speed policy.
Good evening, Mr. Chair. Good morning. It seems like an evening. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Tom Garrison. I'm the City of Eagan liaison to the Eagan Technology Working Group. That is a task force that has studied technology issues since 2004. It has been made up of the Chief Technology Officer of Thompson West, the Chief Information Officer for Northwest Airlines, the top technology person at Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota, a number of very bright technology minds. I believe the page has passed to you a couple of documents that we would like to talk to you about, but first we would like to put this in some factual context, because there's a lot of heat around this issue, but not enough light, and certainly not enough speed of light. And what we want to talk about, if you would turn to the second page of your packet here, there is a very significant broadband gap in Minnesota. In 2005, the United States lost a 60-year technological leadership position in terms of broadband adoption per 100 residents. We had always been number one. Now we are 12. If you go to the next page, you will see the statistics gathered by the International Telecommunications Union, the most respected body in the world for tracking broadband penetration rates. And they update these figures every year. This organization used to only keep a top 15 list, but when the United States fell out of the top 15, we used to be fourth, by the way, in 2001, when the United States fell off of the top list, they now keep a top 20 list, and the United States is 16th. The preliminary information that we are hearing for the next round of updates to this chart are not good. The preliminary information that we are hearing from our European contacts is that the United States will slip yet again. On the very next page, you will see some various quotes there, and I won't, in the interest of time, I won't go through all of these, but I will draw your attention to the one at the bottom of the page. The IEEE, the International Engineering Standards Organization, most respected body, says that the very U.S. prosperity is at risk. Gigabit networks should be a national priority. So here we are, ostensibly arguing about should we have gigabit speeds versus cable modem speeds versus DSL speeds. Here you've got a top body weighing in on that issue. And then I'm going to ask you to move ahead in your packet to this page. It's a clip from Computer World magazine interviewing one of the top experts on the IEEE. They are already beginning the engineering standards work for 100 gigabit Ethernet. So I think you can see the way the world is moving is very rapidly towards more bandwidth. Well, why is that? Well, high-definition television, the YouTube generation, much more video-intensive applications, and many, many things that can be done there. Now I'd like to take you back to this page. It's an Internet speeds comparison, about the fourth chart in your packet. And what you will see here, these are comparisons in the United States and here in Minnesota versus the rest of the world. Here's what we are faced with in Minnesota. Dial-up speeds, wireless speeds, that's been a new fad in various locations, digital subscriber technology, or DSL lines right there. And you'll start to notice that there is a orange line and a yellow line. These are download speeds in the orange and upload speeds in the yellow. Okay? So you'll notice that those are not equal in most of those lower technologies. But as you get to installing high-speed fiber, because after all, there's nothing faster than the speed of light, you will notice that those are the same speeds. They are what's called synchronous, same upload and download. These lower technologies are also shared technologies, which means the more people who are online at one time, the slower it is. And some of you may have noticed that at 10 o'clock at night when everybody in your neighborhood is online. That's not the case with these upper technologies. So how do we compare with the rest of the world? For the prices that we pay here in Minnesota, those in Europe are getting 20 to 30 megabits per second, typically 50 megabits in Japan, and now you have Singapore, which has announced its goal of reaching gigabit speeds by the year 2010. That move has been matched by California, where it has set out an official state policy now to reach gigabit speeds by the year 2010, and the governor has announced his intention to spend some $460 million as part of a state investment to upgrade necessary infrastructure. Our bill that's before you is not asking for any spending at this moment. We are saying we do not have a vision. We do not have a policy goal, and the state ought to have one. We do not have a mechanism by which all the parties, and I do mean all the parties, can be brought to the table, because it is important that providers come to the table, that public sector and other private technology businesses come to the table and talk about what their needs are and define a strategy that works for Minnesota and works in all areas of Minnesota. I will come back later to talk to you about some city-specific issues very briefly, but I think it's important that you hear from the business community and what is changing around us. With me on my right is Mr. Jim Moeller, who has a private technology consulting business. And Jim, perhaps you would take it from there.
Mr. Moeller, welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself and who you represent, and go ahead with the testimony.
My name is Jim Moeller. I actually run my own consulting business out of my home in Eagan, and represent the small and home-based business segment on Eagan Technologies, on Eagan's Technology Working Group. Ultimately, my message for you here today, I guess, would be that the economic development and the economic benefit from broadband telecommunication networks, and particularly the high-speed variety that we're talking about here today, you know, extend far beyond the large corporations. And in fact, go all the way down to the, you know, small businesses, the residences, and in my particular case, a small business run out of my home. You could even argue that I think the economic benefit for that segment is even bigger than for the large corporations. Most large companies can go off and arrange their own telecommunications services to fit their needs. That's not true for the rest of us. In my particular case, I have broadband cable from Comcast, and while the downstream bandwidths at 6 megabits are adequate for the applications I have today, I do run into issues with the very limited upstream bandwidth, which, as you may know, is limited to approximately 380K or so. In addition, while I think others have said it, it's definitely true that the small businesses, and even the small business owner right out of his home, they are competing with people from other cities, you know, other states, across the country, and really around the globe. So it's very important that you take a very global and broad perspective of this issue. Ultimately, our research has also shown that the economic benefits equally apply to rural areas, too. We've researched areas like Winona and others that have deployed broadband and fiber communication networks, and they're seeing economic development as a result of that. One of my largest clients in particular is a company called DigiKey Corporation, which is headquartered out of Deep River Falls, up north in Minnesota. And that company did approximately $830 million in business last year out of Thief River, of which about half of that came in exclusively over the Internet, web orders. So ultimately, this is not just a metro thing. It's not just a large corporation issue, but it's really an issue that spans our entire business base and really our entire population base in Minnesota. So I think the endorsement of a policy like the one you're considering here today can go a long way towards setting a path that can be followed by not only the city of Eagan, but cities across our state and our state as a whole.
Thank you, Mr. Mueller, for your testimony. And, sir, do you want to identify yourself who you represent? And it looks like you have some testimony for us.
Yes, I'm John Scanlon. I'm a medical director with Blue Cross and Blue Shield in Minnesota, and am very active in a number of ways trying to promote telehealth. And the reason I am is because currently access to health care is really geographically determined in a day and age when technology does not require that. Many, if not most, of medical services can now be delivered in remote sites. Already robotic surgery is a real thing that is happening here in Twin Cities. It's happening out of Mayo Clinic, where the operating surgeon is not in the operating room with the patient. Currently, they are still in the same hospital, but that is really not necessary in this day and age with the use of broadband technology. A physician here in the Twin Cities or in Mayo Clinic could be operating on someone in Grand Rapids, could be most any place in the state if the broadband connectivity was there. It can be a life-saving process. There was a story in the Canadian literature about a young girl who was had a severe head injury needing emergency surgery in northern British Columbia. The community was fogged in. They could not air evacuate her out. So a neurosurgeon in Vancouver, through broadband technology, was virtually in the operating room with the general surgeon, real-time visualizing the operating field and directing the general surgeon. The girl survived. If that had happened up north during a snowstorm where you couldn't transport that young child out, the girl would die. And if that is not necessary in this day and age with the use of broadband technology, all sorts of other services can be provided. I was thinking on the way here, if I were to go take my family and go on vacation to northern Minnesota and was in a car accident and there was severe multiple injuries, if it's in northern Minnesota, it would be a primary care physician working alone who might see this once a year without help. If I was vacationing up in northern Ontario, a trauma surgeon from Toronto would be in the operating room or in the emergency room with that remote primary care physician through virtual technology to direct the on-site physician in the care. So it's going on in Iraq right now. The medics have TV cameras in their helmets, and they're transmitting live to surgeons in the field hospitals. So that technology is available. We should be using it. We should have broadband. We should be catching up with the rest of the world. That's my pitch.
Thank you, Dr. Scanlon. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, Ruthie Batulis, NBC Chambers. I'm reminded of that commercial that was on many years ago about, I'm not a surgeon, but I play one on TV, so I'm not a lobbyist, but I'm playing one on TV today. I wanted to just give a few comments from our largest employers and our technology companies that are in Eagan regarding this policy. From Northwest Airlines. Eagan is home to Northwest Airlines IT data center as well as our corporate headquarters. We have many employees and customers who live and work in surrounding communities. A high-tech infrastructure is valuable in so many ways, from enabling our employees to work seamlessly from home on a day-to-day basis or for coverage during a late-night problem, to offering convenient online services and information for our customers. We do business throughout the world. We see global communities and economies that are prospering with the very kind of broadband speeds that local communities like Eagan are seeking. We want not only to improve quality of life in our local communities, but also enable them effectively to compete in the increasing global marketplace. From Intertech, located in Eagan, our daily work involves large data files, sometimes with video and audio content, and with internet bandwidth frequently limits these transfer rates. Higher speeds would enable more thorough, quicker project turn times and better team communication via an online teleconferencing and ultimately happier customers. Working from home is becoming more and more popular and viewed as an important feature benefit. From Blue Cross of Blue Shield, from their technology department, as we move into the next generation of communication, high-speed access from our members and employees' residences will become more and more critical. Applications such as work-at-home employees, video doctor appointments and analysis, and home-based application development are just a few examples of how high-speed internet access, gigabyte and higher, will positively affect our members' experience. And from a global company in Eagan, we are aware of the broadband capabilities that exist in other countries. Countries like Japan, Denmark, and China already have the kind of broadband speed and reach being proposed by this legislation. It has been shown that access to high-speed broadband has a very clear correlation to a community's economic advancement. In fact, it's a fact that the United States severely lacks behind other countries in broadband speed and reach. In the near future, this will affect our ability to compete in the global marketplace. Those opposing this legislation will say that today's applications do not need one gigabit, and that the market should drive how fast and how soon the infrastructure expansion should occur. However, countries that have gigabit capabilities today are creating and using applications that already push the limits of the legislation. If we wait, it'll be too late. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Mr. Harrison, did you have some final comments?
I know your time is brief, and we will wrap up here. From the city perspective, I wanted to leave you with just a couple of things. You'll see on top of the packet that was passed out a resolution that has now passed in basically similar form in the cities of Eagan, Eden Prairie, and St. Paul. A number of other cities in terms of agenda will be taking this up in coming weeks. What's happening, though, is that because there is no federal policy, because there is no state policy, you have a number of cities forming task forces, all going off well-intentioned to try to study things, but with no standardization. Okay? It would be extremely helpful if the state weighed in and had a formal broadband policy that we could all try to align our efforts to. So I urge you to look at the arguments that are included in that, the parameters. What we are suggesting, again, is just, in summary, three things. Setting a goal of 1 gigabit speed, giving ourselves until 2015 to achieve that by bringing all the parties together with a broadband advisory panel. And the third point, which hasn't been talked about, is the state has no one. We have actually a great technology czar in Gopal Khanna. He's a tremendous asset to the state. But even he will acknowledge that he is focused internal to state government operations. There was no one looking at our global competitors, looking at what our residents and businesses need, and how the rest of government could work more efficiently. And with the declining workforce numbers over the years, we are going to need those efficiencies. Finally, I'll leave you with two thoughts. How many of you like milkshakes? I particularly am fond of strawberry milkshakes, and if you've ever had a milkshake that's had too small of a straw, you know what the problem is here. Okay? You can't get that milkshake through the straw. This is really what we're talking about, is broadband pipes giving the latest and greatest speeds to Minnesota and our competitive position. Well, why is that important? Instructional videos. You'll have in your package this piece here. Right now, if you were to try to download your basic half-hour 8-gigabit instructional video, it would take you 13 days from dial-up. Believe it or not, they mapped it out and they took the fastest time that was ever achieved by a Pony Express, and it is faster by a Pony Express to go from New York to California. That is faster to deliver that videotape than it is off of dial-up technology. Wireless technology would take 18 hours. DSL would take 12 hours. Cable would take 3 hours. Gigabit speeds gets that there in 1 minute. Already out in Eagan, with the help of some of our wonderful technology companies, they are putting out technology to the schools to be able to do interactive video conferencing of a very high quality. Ask them about the importance to our kids. Ask them about the importance to healthcare, as you've heard this morning, and to our economy. We would urge, we cannot delay. Doing nothing is not an option.
Thank you, Mr. Garrison. Do we have one more testimony?
Could we please, and again, I want to thank all my testifiers this morning, and originally we thought we were going to be on the end of the list, so they've been adapting. So again, I just want to give my appreciation to everybody. Mr. Chavez, if you can say a few words.
Good morning. My name is Steve Chavez. I serve as a member of the Eagan Technology Work Group, or what we call it the GIG Group. I also serve as the vice chair for the planning commissions for both the city of Eagan and the county of Dakota County. And I got involved in this because of my passion for technology, also because I'm an international business lawyer that practices right out of my house internationally. Just last night, working late, I'm a little blurry this morning, working on a deal in Shanghai. So telecommunications delivery to a home-based business is important for many reasons. We've talked about this within the group. But number one driver is for this, for you to, a perspective for you to take on this opportunity is, we've talked about this before, global competitiveness. For my business, for a lot of home-based businesses, for a lot of businesses here in Minnesota. In addition to that, as far as really, really pushing this through, when you think about the obstacles here, the other analogy other than the milkshake, when I came out of the high-tech telecommunications industry many years ago, I used to wear a tie that was the inverted bottle of the Heinz ketchup bottle. That is the real issue. You've got all kinds of material you want to push through, but you can't because of the bottleneck, the design of the system. So we really need to overcome that. Also, this model that we're proposing with the policy is a customer-driven model. We aren't intending to tell anybody how to do it. We're not interested in hamstringing the providers. We want to focus on the result. That's all we care about. Get us what we need. With that, thanks a lot for the opportunity this morning. You really have a chance here to assume a world-class leadership role as an innovator. So we really challenge you to pick up that opportunity. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Are there any questions?
For Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe it's a short question, and I don't know who could answer it. And I'm not opposed to this. I'm all in favor of broadband. But I'm just wondering, if we were to take the city of Eagan as an example, and if we were going to say right now today we're going to go and we're going to have 1 gigabit of broadband service to every residence in Eagan, what would that cost? Just so everybody has a basis for where we're starting here.
Mr. Garrison?
We have looked at some studies, not specific with gigabit speeds, but with significantly higher megabit speeds that would suggest some cost ranges that are in the hundreds of around $100,000 on up. I don't know, honestly, in answer to the member's question about the gigabit speeds. Part of the reason for suggesting a broadband advisory panel is we know what the others are doing around the world and have found a way to do it. Let's create a structure to bring our brightest minds together about what can be done, what can be afforded. There may be some difficult phasing decisions that have to be made about what happens when. But again, sitting back and waiting for is not going to catch us up with the rest of the world. But it's an excellent question. I don't have the answer to that.
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I came in late, so I don't know what the motion is on this, if we're voting on this today.
That's a good question. The plan on this, members, is to lay this matter over. We're going to pick it up after the first meeting.
No question.
Very good. Again, yeah, just to follow up on that, then we're going to lay this matter on the table. I think it's fair to say this is a work in progress, 2107, and Representative Mason is going to be open to looking at suggestions and ideas to improve the bill or change the bill as need be, and we're going to be taking a look again at this after the first of the year. So make sure you contact Representative Mason over the next few months or whatever to talk about what you see in the bill that you like, don't like, and we'll be moving forward with it again after the first.
Members, I move the bill of 2107.
Any further questions?
We don't need to vote on it. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, testifiers, for coming forward. Appreciate you stepping forward and giving some real life perspectives on this. Very helpful.
Thanks.
Thank you. So House File 2107 officially then will be laid on the table. We are going to move now to the second matter on the agenda, which is the statewide cable franchising bill. Copies have been made available now, and that's what we'll be looking at and working from. And for those who came a little bit later, the plan for this one is to take some more testimony on this matter today, and then we're going to continue with the testimony again on the date of Friday, April the 13th. And we will be moving it to the Commerce and Labor Committee at that time, at some point, probably on the 13th, where it'll wait until after the 1st again, providing some more opportunity for input and discussion as need be. So with that, any questions, members? If not, we're going to move into testimony.
And we'll just kind of go right with the sheet here and start off with Randy Young. Time-wise, just so you have some idea what we're looking at here, we're going to try to close not too much later than 9:30. I need to get to some committees. I suspect other people do as well. So that's the plan here, and we'll get through as many as we can. If we can't get to everybody, we will. You'll have the opportunity on the 13th. Mr. Young, if you identify yourself for the record and proceed, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Randy Young. I'm with the Minnesota Association for Rural Telecommunications, and we represent the Rural Independent Telephone Companies in Minnesota. I'm just here this morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, to give a little Me Too testimony in support of the bill. I think if you look today at what's going on, you'll find that there is no longer a telephone industry. There is no longer a cable industry. There is no longer an ISP industry. We really today have one industry, and that's the communications industry. Years ago, because of technology, regulation segregated these industries into separate regulatory boxes. Technology has really broken down the barriers of those boxes, and today we have one communications industry. And you see that in the way the players in this industry are behaving. You'll see it in the marketplace, and you'll see it in the services that we're offering. Our companies, the telephone industry, the rural telephone companies today, are not only providing telephone service, but internet, and moving rapidly to providing video as well. You find the same thing with the cable industry. They no longer are only cable companies. They are now rapidly moving to be telephone companies, internet providers, and cable providers as well. As a result, you need to look at the marketplace today as one marketplace and not two or three separate marketplaces. And we don't think it makes a whole lot of sense to have different forms of regulation because of the way that a company originally got into this communications marketplace. We think it makes a whole lot of sense for there to be parity in how players, no matter what their legacy industry may have been, to get into this industry. And if the cable industry has easy access into our core business, that is a telephone business, it makes it difficult for us to compete with them for all three of the businesses, that is, again, telephone, internet, and video, when they still have a barrier around their core business. In rural communities, it makes a particularly unique situation, I think, because rural communities are becoming more and more reliant on internet as an economic development engine. We heard some examples of that in the previous bill, Mr. Chair. The difficulty that we have, not necessarily in our own service areas, but as we want to go into another community and compete with another incumbent telephone company, we found that we want to do that by putting in our own infrastructure rather than relying on another telephone provider's infrastructure. And to do that, most often we are putting fiber in, home-to-home, business-to-business. That's an expensive proposition. In order to do that, we need the revenues not only from telephone and from internet, but from cable as well. And it's tragic that in rural communities, they can't have competition for telephone service because we may be forestalled from providing cable service so that we can't come in and provide competitive telephone and internet service as well. Because without that triple play and without the revenues coming from all three sources, we can't afford to pay for the network that it takes to put in the fiber optics that we want to put in these communities to give them the services that we feel that we need. So we think that it makes a whole lot of sense, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that there be parity in entry between the telephone companies getting into the video business and the video companies getting into the telephone business. We support this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Young, for your testimony. Any questions for our testifier at this point? If not, we'll move on to Jerry Knickerbocker. Very good. Mr. Knickerbocker is going to wait to the 13th. So, Mr. Luder, if you want to... No?
right. Cheryl Morgan Spencer. Welcome to the committee this morning. And if you would identify yourself, please, and go ahead with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, esteemed legislators. My name is Cheryl Morgan Spencer, and I bring you greetings from North Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. I'm here this morning at the request of Minneapolis Urban League President and CEO Clarence Hightower. The Minneapolis Urban League supports the current laws in the state of Minnesota governing cable communications. We are opposed to the Minnesota Video Competition Act because we believe that it will result in discriminatory practices leading to cable or internet redlining in our state. The proposed language in the new bill does not mandate equal access to cable service as a core component of the service provided by the new, I love this word, competitive video provider. The language in the new bill states that the holder of a state authorization to provide competitive video service may not deny access to service to any group of subscribers because of race, income, or ethnic characteristics. This leaves a hefty open space for many other kinds of discriminatory practices, namely gender and or religious bias. In addition, we believe that there is a big difference between saying that we will provide service to everyone versus we won't deny access to service to subscribers. Currently, cable services that are provided to all are provided to all areas of our city, period. So there's no discussion about access. Our concern is that we currently have a commitment from our cable providers to provide a basic tier of service across the network to everybody, to all citizens. What this new bill does is to change the standard, really, for who can actually get service and where service is provided. Now the city of Minneapolis is covered, but with this new law, perhaps only the more affluent areas of Minneapolis may get service. That's because this bill allows the new providers not to commit to providing service across the entire community. What could happen is that only affluent neighborhoods will have access to even the basic forms of service because, again, the new providers will not be required to serve all communities. What will happen in communities of color? Minnesota is now an incredibly diverse state. What will happen if the new providers think that they can serve one community over another? How can we even entertain the notion of something like that in a state that is now so incredibly diverse? It really could happen if you allow new providers to come into our state and choose which areas they will serve and which areas they will not. The language in Section 7, Subdivision 1, states that a competitive video service provider shall implement an informal process for holding municipalities or customer inquiries regarding customer service, the provision of public access channels, competitive video providers' fees, and redlining. There is nothing informal about redlining. There is also no way that an informal process can deal with redlining. Using the three words together in the same sentence at all is indicative of a problem in the making. Secondly, why would a billion-dollar business implement an informal cavalier process for anything as important as customer satisfaction unless they truly had no real commitment to the collective communities? Even wealthy people will have problems under this deal because this deal even eliminates provisions for enforcement of equity of service. Currently, our city has a contract with the cable company. People know about the local activities, including educational and local city businesses, because they can watch our city's cable channel. It sounds like local control would be lost under this bill, and that's a problem as well. Finally, in closing, let me say that we are here today, I'm here today, to speak for the people in our communities who may not be as mobile as others. We speak for the seniors, the disabled, and others who may look forward to cable television not only as a means of entertainment, but to stay in touch with the world. Many of our citizens are low income and would not have access to cable under the new law. Please consider the cable needs of all citizens of our great state. We think that this bill lowers the standards for service in our communities, eliminates enforcement for equity of service across our communities, and may keep many people from having access to cable services. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. I think we have a question for you from Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I got to be able to see you.
Hi. I'm struck by your testimony in that you raise a lot of fears about what may happen and concerns about what may happen,
mm-hmm.
and are pretty serious allegations
mm-hmm.
about what you think these companies are going to do. And I want to hear what proof you have that this has happened anywhere else and why you think that a company is going to make decisions that are based on racial or religious discrimination instead of on the economic realities. And my understanding, in fact, is that that's not happened and that they're going to make decisions in terms of density and those kind of issues. It's a kind of a serious allegation to make, and I want to, instead of having allegations, I want to hear about proof.
Ms. Barton Spencer, just come right to the chair with your answer, and then we'll run you over to the representative.
I don't believe that I've made allegations. I have talked about fears, and I think I'd like to have a little more time to think about your question.
Well, please get back to me on that.
Thank you.
Any other questions for members? If not, thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Greg Moore, are you here? Very good. Welcome, Mr. Moore. If you would identify yourself and who you represent. And
will do. There's also a packet of information that's going around that we've been asked to abbreviate our comments. So there's maps and other descriptions and so forth. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Greg Moore, and I'm the Executive Director of Northwest Suburbs Cable Commission and Northwest Community Television. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to talk to you today about community television, the municipal cable television franchise process, and the proposed legislation. Our commission is strongly opposed to this legislation. Northwest Suburbs Cable Commission is a joint powers commission. The nine cities we serve have a population of about 300,000 people and about 75,000 cable subscribers. In 1981, we granted our first franchise. In 2000, we granted two additional competitive franchises. Unfortunately, financial difficulties associated with the general economic decline of that year prevented the competitors from building and operating a cable system. One of those competitors was Saran, a wholly owned subsidiary of what was then Northern States Power. Despite clear statements by Saran to build and operate a competitive cable system, economics, not cities, prevented Saran and the other competitor from going forward. Before I describe a little about our community television program, I want to emphasize two important facts that are common to all community television organizations. First, PEGA access of community television is the only truly local programming anywhere on television. Locally produced content is unique and different in each community we serve. Second, decisions about community television, such as the number of channels allocated, the organizations that will program these channels, and the amount of local money to fund these channels are all also unique and different in each community. Municipal franchising allows each community to decide what it wants community television to be, the resources it wants to commit, and the price cable subscribers are willing to pay. Community television organizations are accountable to elected municipal officials. Community television and municipal franchising are inextricably linked, and any proposed law that would reduce the authority of municipalities to define, fund, or oversee community television, or sever local programming from local governance, would, in our opinion, severely weaken or destroy community television. Now, turning back to Northwest Community Television, the cable company bills each of our subscribers 80 cents per month to support our organization. In addition to this, our commission has committed 100% of franchise fees to community television. Over the past 25 years, we estimate that about $43 million of local money has been invested in our programming. One of our programs, 12 News, is a daily news program. During the last election, 12 News covered 24 different races, providing 55 candidates with free airtime to do what we call candidate profiles. We also covered three major referendums. This coverage included all general election candidates for city council, state legislature, and the county commission. We provided live election night coverage, which included local election results and interviews with 20 candidates. We also televised about a dozen legal women voter debates during that period. Since the legislative session began, we've interviewed and done stories on the following local legislators: Representative Kurt Zellers, Sarah Anderson, Lyndon Carlson, Deborah Hillstrom, Senator Terry Bonoff, Representative Joyce Peffin, Melissa Hartman, Senator Ron Lantz, Ann Ress, Warren Limmer, Linda Scheid, and Representative John Benson and Mike Nelson. Moving to public access programming is thriving in our area. We have approximately 500 current members. They produce about 1,200 programs per year, not including repeats. We estimate that about 50% of our public access producers are people of color, and of that number, 25% are immigrants. Public access, though, is not just about numbers. For example, the stories our immigrant members tell us are truly amazing. They are thrilled and ecstatic when they talk about their opportunity to reach thousands of people with their thoughts and ideas, their art, and their music. We think Northwest Community Television is doing a good job. In 2006, according to the last cable subscriber survey we took, 46% of cable subscribers surveyed were regular viewers. Compared with other basic cable channels, Channel 12 had more viewers than the Travel Channel, the Learning Channel, Business CNBC, the Comedy Channel. Channel 12 had fewer viewers, however, than CNN and the Discovery Channel. In summary, we think we're doing a good job, but more important, local cable subscribers who pay for community television with franchise fees and community television fees that are itemized on their monthly bills think they're doing a good job. I'd like to say just a word about competition and build-out, or the lack of a build-out provision in the proposed law. Cities want to see far greater competition to provide video service to our residents, because we believe that competition will help hold down rates and improve service. That's why it's important to provide competitive service to everyone, not just the wealthiest and most capable of paying for service. The lack of a build-out requirement also creates the ultimate negotiating weapon, the ultimate trump card for the competitive video provider, as the competitive video provider is free to serve whoever they like and leave out whoever they like. They will be in a strong position to reduce or eliminate franchise fees or PEG funding in exchange for serving areas they claim they would not otherwise serve, essentially pitting low and middle income people not served by the competitor against community television and possibly destroying community television. Finally, we invite and encourage competitors, especially Quest, to apply for a franchise. We have approximately 100,000 Quest homes in our area and a streamlined competitive process and franchise waiting for them. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I want to thank you again for this opportunity to testify, and I'd welcome any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Moore, for your testimony. Questions from members? Seeing none, let's move on to the next testifier. If you'd identify yourself for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you. My name is Tim Finnerty. I am Executive Director of the Ramsey-Washington Cable Commission, a municipal joint powers entity that carries out the franchise administration and PEG functions on behalf of 12 municipalities in the Northeast Metro, including Birchwood Village, Grant, Willerney, Delwood, Matamidi, White Bear Lake, White Bear Township, Badness Heights, North St. Paul, Maplewood, Oakdale, and Lake Elmo. Ramsey-Washington Cable Commission is opposed to this legislation. Mr. Moore just spoke about the importance of PEG channels in the northwest suburbs. Our organization and area is very similar, so all the considerations and concerns he noted are applicable within the community that I serve as well. I want to add that PEG implementation depends upon technical details, so let me get technical on you for a moment. I provide some technical information to the I think was distributed in reference to video picture resolution. And I just want to talk about that for a little bit. As you can see from that, a standard definition television picture has a resolution standard of 720 by 480. That's what most cable and broadcast outlets produce, including PEG stations. However, video production is transitioning to high definition standards. Numerous cable networks and over-the-air broadcasters already transmit in high definition, and that's where video is headed. Just try to go into Best Buy and find a TV set that isn't capable of displaying high definition. The standard definition only sets are virtually extinct. Meanwhile, high definition sets are getting bigger and cheaper. That's what people are buying now, and that's the way things are headed. High resolution looks very good on those large TV sets. High definition resolution stretch out very nicely over a 50-inch screen. Standard definition channels don't stretch out quite as well, and eventually that'll have to be addressed in PEG. I raise this because local franchise administration, of course, provides a mechanism for addressing technical standards. We set technical standards at the time of initial franchising. We modify standards during the term of the franchise, and we update and upgrade technical standards as part of the franchise renewal process. That's how we get from here to there. So then, if minimum technical standards aren't incorporated into franchises that would be granted under a statewide bill, how does the provision of PEG channels play out? In other states where comparable legislation is passed, the word from the PEG community isn't encouraging. Folks seem quite concerned that providers intend to transmit PEG to subscribers at reduced resolutions, like 320 by 240. That would be half the resolution of current standard definition television. That might look okay on an iPod, but when it's stretched over a 50-inch Sony, it's unacceptable. Given that the system technology for telco TV is touted as being capable of standard and high definition, it doesn't make sense that PEG would be treated in some sort of substandard fashion. Video resolution is one of several critical technical issues that are addressed in local franchising. While video resolution is about fairly common standards, other interrelated technical requirements are inherently local in nature. Local franchising provides, again, the mechanism to incorporate technical requirements of all kinds in a manner that meet the reasonable, unique needs of the community. The difference between statewide franchising schemes and the current local system of franchising are these details. Statewide schemes ignore them. Local franchising provides the opportunity to account for them and put them into place. So that concludes my testimony, and I'd be happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Finnerty. Looks like a question from Representative Hoppe.
Mr. Chair, it might be a question for the chair. I think if we're talking about if this passes, having PEG possibly at the PEG channels at reduced resolution rates, maybe not right now, but at some point we should have Quest or somebody come down and talk about that, or maybe Mr. Elef, if we look at page 5, section 9, subdivision 2, the content format, is that something that would address the reduced resolution? And maybe we don't want to cover this right now, and maybe this is an interim question, but I think at some point it is something we should talk about.
That's a good point. I know there's Quest representatives here, and we're going to meet again on the 13th of April, and that might be a time.
Okay. Thank you,
Mr. Chair. Thanks for raising that. Seeing no further questions, we'll move on to the next testifier. Is Mr. Rhodes here? Welcome to the committee, Mr. Rhodes. If you'd identify yourself, please. And
thank you.
Share
thank
with you us your testimony.
My name is Pete Rhodes. I am owner and president of WRNB. I make a note of correction in the listing from MRNB to WRNB. Thank you for having me here today, Mr. Chairman and distinguished members of this committee. I own and operate Minnesota's only African-American designed programming service on cable systems. We have launched our service in 1984 and celebrate our 22nd year providing service designed, as I mentioned, to the African-American communities and other communities of color. I'm in opposition and speak on behalf of my audience and my listeners and my community to this proposed bill. I note that nowhere in the bill that is being proposed that it accounts for diversity as well in programming. We talk about access, but importantly as well and critical as well to the communities that will receive these channels from our current systems and those future systems that will come on board is the importance of diversity in programming. We look at our communities today, particularly in my community, and crime and other events are ravishing it. And I would be agree with Mr. Young, who spoke about this being a industry of communication. And I would add that this is an industry of communication, communicating to diverse communities. So therefore, not only is it important that universal access be permitted and be included on any current or new programming services that are provided here in our state, but that we also look at the importance of diverse programming being provided. Not only do we not want low resolution on our public access channels, we want to have the ability to have, again, diverse programming. I see in a community that has well over 80 ethnic groups in our community that in which I live in. Now, those communities are being served adequately and above, so I would say, by the current cable system. Since 1984, I've had the privilege to provide our service, although it sometimes has been difficult, to over five or six different cable companies over this 22-year period. So we continue to look to provide diverse programming to our audiences as it is important. Images are important. Some of us would say that seeing general programming and the programs provided by general markets and general services is adequate enough. Indeed, many of those programs we see on television and here on the radio today may have African American and other minorities starring in them. But I would also say that a lot of majority of those programs do not meet or reach out with subject matter, and in most cases portray those important and positive images. So as this committee moves forward to take a look at this important bill, nowhere in it does I see the importance of a diverse programming. And I speak in opposition to the proposed bill because it doesn't call for universal service and it doesn't call for a diverse programming. And I want to thank the committee for having me here today to speak on behalf of this bill, and I would be now taking questions that you may have, if any.
Very good. Thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions from the members? Seeing none, I think you're good to go. Thank you again for your testimony.
Thank you.
Next is Mr. Dwayne Reed, I believe.
Yes, sir.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank
and
you, sir.
Thanks for being here to share your testimony. If you'd identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Okay, to Representative Johnson and the committee, good morning. My name is Dwayne K. Reed. I'm representing the Minneapolis NAACP as its president. I'm representing the organization, so I'm not going to go off on a tangent, and I'm not going to necessarily have empirical data, but I can provide that based upon any comment that I might make. I would supply that in writing to respective representatives. Thanks for allowing me to testify this morning. I think it's an opportunity that most citizens don't have, and as an organization, I treasure this opportunity. We are not interested in picking sides on what telecommunication company should have this and should have that. Our interest is purely one of of setting principles on fair and equitable access to outlet of communication or input of communication. Our guiding outline and principles of the technology providers that provide access to all customers on a non-discriminatory basis. I've heard testimony here today, and some of it I agree with and some of it I don't agree with, but our first concern is definitely Section 5, which is redlining. It's vague in nature. It doesn't necessarily say what happens if, you know, anyone can suggest litigation and the cost of it. But communities that are disenfranchised and are poverty-ridden aren't necessarily going to pick up the phone and call their local attorney and complain about access from a legal standpoint. My thing is, why fix it if it ain't broke? Excuse my vernacular and my language, but in the state of California, our state branch, our conference of branches of the NAACP, opposed a similar bill back in 2005 for some of the same reasons, not all of the same reasons, but some of the same reasons. And I would be happy to forward a packet of information based upon how that relates to this current bill. Again, we are not here to pick sides between one provider versus another. I could say I like this versus that. I could say I like satellite. I could say I like whatever, but that's the point. The point is strictly one of potential redlining, and if it's not addressed specifically, you know, what you have right here as far as proposed language in this House file is not adequate to protect the rights and access of all people in our community. Thank you again for your opportunity to allow me to testify.
Thank you for your testimony. Members, any questions, reactions? Representative Hockey?
One quick comment, thank you for coming, Mr. Reed, and I this is, I guess, a comment directed at everybody. We had in another committee two or three days ago, I had some people that came here to testify on a bill from Watertown, and they came, and you said the opportunity that most citizens don't have. I wish more people knew that anybody can come and testify, that these are open hearings, and these guys came to talk about a canoe route, and they didn't know that they could come and testify. So I don't know if we're televised today or if anybody will ever hear that, but those of you in the audience, spread it around. People can come and testify. I think that's an important point.
Good, and you made your point well. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
So Mr. Mendoza, are you present? So come on down. What, three in the
end? I'll be right out of your way.
Looks like it's Martin, Mendoza, and Jensen.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Mike Martin, Executive Director of the Minnesota Cable Association. We'll try to move along in our short panel here, but we have a couple speakers, and then I'll conclude with some remarks, and hopefully we can come back on the 13th and cover anything we missed here today.
Very good. Looks like we're moving along right on time here, and I think we'll get through everybody, and like you said, on the 13th there'll be opportunity for further input as need be, but go ahead and move forward with your testimony, whoever wants to start off.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Bill Jensen. I'm a regional vice president with Mediacom Communications Corporation. My office is based south of here in Waseca, Minnesota. I'm here this morning to touch briefly on why Mediacom is opposed to this draft bill, what I like to call the statewide franchising bill. Mediacom offers broadband services in, throughout Minnesota, including video programming, high-speed internet, and digital programming services, and as well as telephone in over 200 communities in Minnesota. We've invested over $85 million since the beginning days of our operations in November of 1999. You know, my world in cable TV is very busy. In fact, 1 hour south of here, I have my hands full with competition. Now, I'm not talking about satellite dishes. I'm talking about competition from the telephone industry. In fact, in a few of our communities, we have one of the oldest telephone, what I like to call competitors or overbuilders of a cable company called Hutchinson Telephone in Hutchinson, Minnesota, where they launch the triple play, that being video, internet, and they had telephone, we call it voice, way before Mediacom had. And there's a ton of competition out there. But with all due respect to a previous testifier who said it's a tragedy that there's no competition in Minnesota, I would tell you that there is a competition in Minnesota, and there's a ton of it out in rural Minnesota. Right now, throughout Minnesota, I'm competing with 36 telephone companies for triple play customers. A lot of our service area is in rural Minnesota. We go as far north as the Iron Range, Grand Rapids, Virginia, Eveleth, soon to be Hibbing. We have some metropolitan communities. We have Lake Minnetonka pretty much surrounded, except the city of Minnetonka. And we're in the cities of Prior Lake and Savage. We're also pretty good with the Saints. We're in pretty good with St. Peter. We're the provider there, St. James and St. Bonifacius. But the deal really is, and I believe one of the other testifiers here just a few minutes ago said, and he used his quote, if it ain't broke, why fix it? There's plenty of competition, maybe not here in the Twin Cities area, but there's plenty of competition outside of the Twin Cities. And again, if it ain't broke, why fix it? Our competitors, be it Hutchinson Telephone, be it Hickory Tech Telephone, be it Paul Bunyan Telephone Cooperative, they've had no problem appearing before the cities that we operate a cable system and applying for and requesting a video franchise. They haven't had an issue with that. They've done it willingly. As you know, in Minnesota, we have the level playing field statute. So whoever gets a franchise, the terms have to be the same. Competition is healthy. And I'm just not sure, you know, if I could get all 200 mayors or clerks here before you in the communities I serve throughout Minnesota, but I have a pretty good idea that each one of them would not want the state of Minnesota to take care of their franchising. And if you'd like me to do that, I'll get a bus and I'll bring them at your April 13 testimony. I think the real issue from us here at Mediacom and on behalf of the cable television industry in Minnesota is, I guess, the cut to the chase. Competitive markets are out there. You might not see them here if you live in the Twin Cities area, but they're out there. Franchising is working in Minnesota. It's competitive franchising. And again, if it ain't broke, why fix it? Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Any questions?
I see no questions, Mr. Jensen. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
And Mr. Mendoza, I believe. Go ahead and identify yourself for the record. Welcome to the committee and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Distinguished members of the committee, my name is Tony Mendoza, and I'm legal counsel to the Minnesota Cable Communications Association. Last week at this time, you heard Quest President for Minnesota, John Stanek, state that the video franchising reform bill that it is supporting here is modeled on laws that allowed cable to enter the telephone business. Quest claims it needs this special interest legislation in order to compete in the market for cable television services. Well, there are several glaring flaws in Quest's arguments in support of these special rules for Quest. Quest's bill is a solution in search of a problem. Quest is creating a problem that does not exist. Current Minnesota law provides that local governments must treat competing cable TV providers the same with respect to areas served, PEG access fees, and franchise fees. These and other provisions of state law ensure that local governments will treat all competitors the same. Local governments are not barriers to competition, but protectors of fair competition. When cable operators upgraded their networks to provide phone and high-speed video services, local governments required them to upgrade their entire network to serve the entire franchise area. Cable did not take advantage of any special rules to ease their entry into these new markets. Now, Cable gladly offers its phone and high-speed data services to all of its customers, regardless of income level or what neighborhood they live in. Cable didn't need government to force it to do this. It was just good business. Current state law has worked to bring telephone and video services to everyone. Current state law can and should continue to work to bring the benefits of competition to everyone. To Mr. Stenick's point about the video franchising legislation being modeled on telephone competition laws, video franchising laws should not be modeled after telephone regulations. Phone and video are very different types of services requiring different regulatory structures. Phone rules don't make sense when applied to video, and video rules don't make sense when applied to phone service. Telephone service is a common carrier service in which local community needs are largely irrelevant to how the service is provided. Cable TV is not a common carrier service. Community needs are very relevant to how cable service is provided. It makes sense for video to be regulated at the local level so cable service providers can respond to local community needs. Competitive telephone rules were designed to assist competitive local exchange carriers, as we know them in the business as CLECs. These were firms without their own facilities. These rules were designed to help firms without their own facilities to enter the local phone markets. These rules were not created at the behest of the cable industry, as Mr. Stanek would have had you assume. These rules were created primarily at the behest of AT&T, which, ironically, at the time of the Telecommunications Act of 1996, was divested of its local exchange facilities. Qwest, one of the baby bells, owns its own facilities. Qwest does not need special rules to give it a competitive advantage over other facilities-based providers. Qwest likes to confuse cable with telephone CLECs that cherry-pick customers primarily in business phone markets. But cherry-picking the business telephone market is a lot different than cherry-picking residential video markets. Another word for the latter phenomenon is redlining. Qwest wants new special laws that would allow Qwest to cherry-pick residential video markets. Minnesota should not allow this to happen. Don't be confused by Qwest's clever but deeply flawed argument. Video is not telephone. Telephone is not video. And there is no problem here that needs fixing. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Mendoza. Mr. Martin?
Yes, just very briefly to close, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make just one comment. Recently, the FCC issued an order in conjunction with their inquiry into the local franchising process, and this has been cited many times in the discussion, and I'd just like to point out a few things about that decision. First, the FCC did not preempt any state law, which would include Minnesota, of course. Minnesota's law was not preempted by anything in that decision. Secondly, the FCC did promulgate some standards in response to what they considered abuses by local governments in the franchising process. And Minnesota really is not impacted by that. For example, a city cannot, according to the FCC, a city cannot require a build-out at a faster rate than they required for the incumbent. Minnesota has the same standard for both the incumbent and subsequent competitors. Another one is a city can't delay activation of a competing system until a build-out is complete. Well, Minnesota law has never required that. Minnesota law, just the opposite, encourages activation of the system as soon as possible. And then, finally, a city cannot require build-out in density of less than was required by the incumbent operator. And again, Minnesota law, our level playing field law, addresses this issue, and there's simply no preemption. In conclusion, Mr. Chairman, Minnesota cable television companies have invested millions of dollars so that they can continue to provide new services, new program offerings, and using the latest technology. This investment is made by private capital in a very competitive environment that serves consumers' needs. Today's consumers want greater reliability and diverse program offerings at competitive prices. The industry continues to meet that challenge without coming here asking for loopholes and shortcuts that will deny service to some and avoid community responsibilities. We have a very simple deal with the cities. We can run our lines and offer services to the residents of the community. In exchange for that right, we agree to serve everybody. Those are the rules, and those rules should stay the same. Thank you very much, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I see no questions. We're going to move on to our last testifier for the day. Ron Elwood, coming on down. Mr. Elwood, welcome to this committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, and thank you for allowing me to come on, although I was a little late in signing up. I appreciate it. Ron Elwood with Legal Aid. We represent low-income Minnesotans statewide. A couple brief comments. The way we kind of look at this issue, you know, it's been framed as sort of a yes, they can, no, they can't. And I'm not sure that's the right frame. I mean, we've heard competition. There is competition already between cable and dish, and it just doesn't seem to me to be the right frame. I think the solution, ultimate solution to the problem, is ensuring that over some period of time, the new entrants will come up to the same standards and the same level playing field. I hate that cliche, but as the incumbents, it's reasonable to allow a certain period for that to happen, a reasonable period. I don't know what that number of years is or whatever. Protections can certainly be built in so that if the feared cherry picking does occur, in other words, if they don't follow through with the plan, there could be some penalties. I'm sure we could figure that out. I mean, everybody wants competition. I don't think the pricing structures now are high. The choices are limited, and in some of the cable franchises now, I know my own home, for example, I just lost a TV channel I didn't like. I mean, I like, and I can't get it because I have no choice. So I think, you know, to the extent that density issues do not, the economic issues do not, factors do not dictate that all communities will be served equally. Perhaps it's not going to be the case. The issues in rural Minnesota are going to be different from the issues in urban Minnesota in terms of how the build-out occurs and potentially which communities within the community will be served and not served. I don't think anybody, certainly not you, would want a result where there's ultimately haves and have-nots and where potentially captive customers wind up paying increased rates because of some of the fears that have been articulated. So in closing, I think that a plan could be developed that would, at the end of the day, allow a reasonable build-out over a period of time where everybody winds up at the same playing field, and to ensure that all communities are served in an orderly fashion and nobody's left out. That concludes my testimony.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions? Seeing none, members, again, we're going to renew this discussion on Friday, April 13th. At that time, we'll have the state franchising bill formally introduced and in our hands, and we'll continue this discussion. Thank you for your time, and we'll see you in a few weeks. Meeting adjourned.